Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Friday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day of news that we're going to figure out together live on the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. Got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. The left cannot compete with conservative thought on Twitter. So they're trying to kill the platform. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Everything is racist.
If progressive activists in and out of the media can no longer censor conservative thought on Twitter, they're going to try to delegitimize the entire platform. That is their goal, to delegitimize the entire platform. The reason why they want to do that is they will then get people to stop using it. Stopping people from using Twitter means they will not be exposed to views that folks on the left do not want them to be exposed to. This is the strategy that is right now, right this moment, courtesy of a brand new smear in the New York Times. It is the strategy that is being employed against Elon Musk. And it is so transparent. It is so painfully obvious. Painfully. It literally hurts when I see this kind of nonsense strategy being used. So the New York Times has out a story today that is a smear job if there ever was one. And again, they're not even really truly trying to hide it. And they titled it on Twitter, ironically, they titled it Breaking News. Now, what exactly was the breaking news? This is the title of the story. Hate speech on Twitter has jumped since Elon Musk took over, researchers found. Just very quickly, how is that breaking news? That's not breaking news. It's not even news because it's not true, but it's not breaking news. People just throw around that phrase like it means something now. It doesn't. It's not news. It's not breaking. It's not breaking news. Now, the researchers that they're using here are from left-wing groups that we're supposed to pretend don't have a dog in this fight. We're supposed to pretend that they're just down the middle. These are just researchers. Except, of course, they're not. So let's look at the data. Well, I was going to say, let's look at the data that they found out because, you know, they're titling it with the term researchers. You would presume that there'd be data that would be linked. No. Let's read the data that the New York Times quotes but doesn't actually link to. We don't get a link to any of the research. We don't get a link to any of the methodology that's used. Nothing. We just get three little talking points, data points that they throw out there that we're supposed to just trust. Okay, fine. Let's just, for the sake of argument, let's just trust it. They write, before Elon Musk bought Twitter, slurs against Black Americans showed up on the social media service an average of 1,282 times a day. After the billionaire became Twitter's owner, they jumped to 3,876 times a day. Wow, that's a lot. They say slurs against gay men appeared on Twitter 2,506 times a day on average before Musk took over. Afterwards, their use rose to 3,964 times a day. An anti-Semitic post referring to Jews or Judaism soared. Weirdly, they don't give a specific number here, but they say they soared more than 61% in 2 weeks after Mr. Musk acquired the site. Something tells me that the data showed that anti-Semitism was much worse before Elon Musk, for them not to be very specific in the amount that's shown every single day, like they did for Black people and for gay people. Now, they continue in the story. These findings from the Center for Countering Digital Hate, the Anti-Defamation League, and other groups that we don't mention that study online platforms provide the most comprehensive picture to date of how conversations on Twitter have changed since Mr. Musk purchased Twitter. Except it doesn't give us anything comprehensive because you don't provide any of the data. There's no link. There's no link back. They linked other things in this story, including to some what they thought was supporting data, but nothing specific to the main point, the main framing of this particular argument, the research. We don't see the findings. And this is my, I think this is my favorite part. This is why I say they're not even trying to hide what they're doing at the New York Times. They say Mr. Musk has denied claims that hate speech has increased on Twitter under his watch. Last month, he tweeted a downward trending graph that he said showed that hate speech impressions had dropped by a third since he took over. He did not provide underlying numbers or details of how he was measuring hate speech. It's so funny because you know what the New York Times also doesn't do in their story? That they're criticizing him for, what was it? Not providing underlying numbers or details of how he was measuring hate speech? New York Times chooses to also not provide the underlying numbers or details of how they are measuring hate speech. None of that is in this story. None of it. It's not a large story. I went back and I read it twice, and then I posted on Twitter. Because every once in a while, you've probably done this before. Anyone listening has probably done this. It's there. Something's there. We just don't see it. For whatever reason, we miss it. I've certainly done that before. And I was like, does anyone see the actual link to the study? Where is the data? Doesn't exist. There's no link to it. Now, I'm sure the data exists somewhere. I went to the website for the Department of Countering Hate Online. Didn't post it, at least as of when I looked at it a few hours ago. So shouldn't the New York Times provide the exact same data that they are criticizing Elon Musk for not providing? Or at least treat it the exact same way? Seems kind of obvious to me.
One would think, right? Well,
that's your problem. Thinking. Don't think.
No.
If you think.
That's the truth.
If you think, it doesn't quite make sense.
How have your mentions been lately, though? That's normally a pretty good barometer for hate speech.
I have not seen any more or less hate on my Twitter feed. And it's funny because as they're talking about how things have gotten worse on Twitter. Maybe it has. Maybe objectively it has. For me, I haven't noticed anything different, positive or negative, other than I've gotten more followers. That's the only thing that I've noticed. And my assumption was behind that was they took away some of the algorithms that were pushing down conservatives from getting seen more. And I imagine some of it has to do with more people coming onto Twitter who are conservative, who previously left because conservative speech was getting silenced. So they ditched the service, and now they're coming back. But other than that, there's been no difference. So how is this study, and frankly, how is the New York Times defining what hate speech is? Hate speech is not an actual thing. It's not a legal term. Right? Hate speech just simply means speech that you find hateful. Now, there is some subjectivity to that. There's some objectivity throwing out racial slurs, most people would say, well, that's hateful speech. But hate speech as a designation doesn't actually mean anything. But they're out there saying that hate speech has increased. How are you defining hate speech? Because when you say that there are only two genders, that is being defined as hate speech by folks on the left. Now, would a reasonable person find that to be hateful? No. Do some people? Yeah, okay. Doesn't mean that they're right. Doesn't mean that it actually is hateful. That matters. The definitions here matter. So Twitter now, they say, has 4,000 anti-gay slurs a day. Every single day. 4,000 pretty much. It was 3,900 and something. Let's round it up to 4,000. Out of how many tweets sent a day, do you know? Say 500 million.
500 million.
That is surprisingly exact.
In the whole world?
Yeah, 500 million a day tweets are sent worldwide. 4,000 out of 500 million is about 0.0008% of Twitter.
That's not very much, right?
No, it's not.
Again, the thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose a bumper sticker talking point, I prefer it to be zero. Okay. But just throwing it out there, it's 0.0008%. Do you differentiate between the context in which the anti-gay slurs are used? Because my assumption is that they're just searching on keywords. And that's my guess when it comes to the use of anti-black slurs, right? They say very specific about how many tweets includes language that is anti-black. And I'm presuming that you search for, say, the N-word, because that's an obvious one that you might assume. What if it's someone who's quoting a rap lyric? What if it's someone who's black using it in a way that some black people use it? Does that count as, and obviously you could say that it's still the use of a racial slur, but it might send slightly a different message than calling someone the N-word with the intent of being a racist. They don't give you any of those information. It just doesn't exist there. They say a 60% increase in anti-Semitic tweets. Okay, but in 2021, ADL, who's part of this research, and maybe again this is why they didn't get too specific when it came to anti-Semitism, they said it was a record high year for anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. In 2018, they said they had 4.2 million anti-Semitic tweets. And yet we're blaming Elon Musk for the anti-Semitism that's currently on Twitter. What was the excuse back in 2018 when you had 4.2 million anti-Semitic tweets? I'm asking for a friend, a Jewish friend. I'm asking for myself. I'm just kind of curious. No data is presented. None. They don't tell us how we're seen to define any of this. They're not telling us context. They're not giving us the methodology. They don't even tell us all the groups that are involved. In the main study that they framed this entire smear over, the strategy then becomes very, very clear. We know exactly what they're doing. They don't want an open and free Twitter. They don't want a Twitter that allows for free speech. In fact, the New York Times, they seem to criticize Elon Musk for being a free speech absolutist. They don't like that. When was the last time you had a media outlet come out and say, we don't like this thing called free speech? Well, starting with Donald Trump, this is when things got really bad. They decided that they get to be the purveyors of what is and is not free speech. So now they're trying to dissuade you from using Twitter. They're going to treat it, and really they already are treating it, like Gab, which is an actual social media site filled with hate. Like, you go on Gab, for me as a Jew, I get hit with the K word immediately. I mean, Gab is not a great place. Very, 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 very different from Twitter. But Gab has a brand as being anti-Semitic and filled with hate. That's what they're trying to do with Twitter. It is a PR campaign by activists. Stay off Twitter because you're going to find hate. What it really means is stay off Twitter because you're going to be exposed to conservative views that we don't really have a response to. We can't really argue the merits of there being more than two genders. We just want you to accept it. And when put in a position where we have to define what a gender is or what a woman is, when we're put in a position where we have to defend our position that there's 17,000 different genders that you can hold all at once or none at all, or sometimes both, or sometimes half, kind of depends on the day and how you're feeling, they can't actually defend that. So now they're just telling you, yeah, don't go to Twitter. They're hateful. It's all bigots. There's no doubt that you can find hate on Twitter. Right now, I'm sure I can find a ton of hate. I'll just look at my mentions. It's always been there. But to pretend it's any different now than it was when Elon Musk wasn't in charge is dishonest. It's disingenuous. It's not like they don't have any rules. It's not like they all of a sudden got rid of all of their rules. They just suspended Kanye West. And it would appear, based on both the tweets and a screenshot of text message Elon sent to Kanye, it came directly from Elon Musk, the decision to pull the plug on Kanye's Twitter account. He was suspended after sending a whole bunch of nutty anti-Semitic tweets, including an image of a swastika and a Star of David sort of morphed into one. And it was part of his mission of saying, I find love in everybody. The Jews and the Nazis. If only the same could be said for the Nazis. Maybe we wouldn't have gone through historically what we've gone through. And this, of course, comes on the heels of that insane interview he did with Alex Jones.
I see good things about Hitler also. I love everyone, and Jewish people are not going to tell me, you can love, us. And you can love what we're doing to you with the contracts. And you can love what we're pushing with the pornography. But this guy that...
By the way, just real quick. Are Jews the one pushing the pornography? Maybe it's true. I'm in the group of Jews. I've not heard of that specifically.
You're the expert more than me on that. I don't know.
I'm certain there are Jewish pornographers. I'm certain of that. Is it just the Jews? Is it just, okay.
Invented highways. Invented the very microphone that I use as a musician.
No, that didn't happen.
You can't say out loud that this person ever did anything good, and I'm done with that. I'm done with the...
that Adolf Hitler, horrible person. Horrible. But he did have kind eyes.
I've heard that too.
Great person, but he was an animal lover. What are we doing here, ma'am? Oh my God. So he ends up getting booted from that cesspool of hatred where there are no rules, except I guess maybe we should call it, it's just racist. The rules are only being applied to racist black men who are musicians. A lot of really bad takes are coming out of this. Not the Alex Jones, although actually also the Alex Jones interview with Kanye West, but we're seeing a lot of the responses as folks in the media have conversations about what is and is not permitted or should be permitted on Twitter and the implications of it being a truly free speech platform. And you've got folks like Alyssa Farah from The View, who doesn't normally say anything intelligent, so why should today be an exception?
I watch clips of the live stream, and I hate that these people even have a platform. And I kept thinking to myself, I hope I never have to hear the names Kanye West, Alex Jones, Nick Fuentes again. But the problem is this. Kanye West has 32 million Twitter followers. There are only 14 million Jews in the world. To put a finer point on it,
Well, that's not a very good point at all, lady. You do understand that not everyone who follows Kanye West like automatically sees that and says, well, I'm going to hate me some Jews and support me some Nazis. It's not quite how it works.
No, it's a numbers game. Simple as that.
Just saying. I mean, I'm one of the people who follows Kanye West. Or I did until they canceled it.
6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust, and there's only 7 million Jews in the U.S. Uh-huh. We have to denounce this. We have to speak out because that kind of horror could happen again if these morons have platforms. And by the way, I was just shocked by the fact that I think this is the first time in Alex Jones's life that he wasn't the craziest, most offensive person in the room. Because even at moments, he looked kind of shocked by what Kanye was saying.
Again, this is part of the argument of shutting down Twitter or turning people away from Twitter. Some people shouldn't have platforms because it's dangerous that they have a platform. That's not how the First Amendment works. I certainly agree that I don't like that certain hateful people have platforms, whatever that platform happens to be. I'm not going to pretend that Nick Fuentes has a large platform. He does not. He's been canceled on everything. Kanye West certainly does have a big platform, or he did. Okay. Simply having a large platform and espousing views that are at the mild part disagreeable, at the extreme part just dangerous, it's still not unpermissible in a free society. Remember that quote I tell all the time? Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. Well, Alyssa Farah has horrible views. The View has dangerous views, in my view. It's a lot of saying The View. Can't get away from it. In my estimation, The View has many policy positions that I find to be dangerous. And they have a large platform. And they say things that are hateful all the time. All the time. They say things that are pushing lies, misinformation, that could ultimately inspire someone to do something bad. Do they have the right to hold the positions that they hold? Yes. Now, I know it's a little bit tricky when we're talking about the First Amendment, and we're talking about, you know, private companies, but we're talking about the spirit of the First Amendment and free speech. Should Alyssa Farah and Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg and Sarah, whatever her name is, Anna something or other, should we stop them from speaking because someone thinks that their views are hateful? And I would argue no. I find a lot of their views hateful. I don't think I should be able to tell them that they no longer have a platform. That's not how it works. This is a good way to understand some folks on the left and the way that they view the First Amendment and free speech issues in general. That if you don't hold the positions that they want you to hold, you are a danger. This went not just against like someone like Kanye West or Nick Fuentes. They said this about virtually every Republican politician with whom they disagreed. The simple idea of questioning whether or not an election is fair and honest, they said that that's dangerous. Democracy's on the line if you ever, ever, ever say something like that. That's what they believe. They're the ones who right now are trying to determine what speech should or should not be considered free. That is terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying, and we all should call it for what it is. But they are sort of cloaking themselves in this self-righteousness because they've got someone who, by all reason, could be deemed an anti-Semite at this point. But they use him to sort of hide the fact that they're really just taking positions based on their own politics. At the end of the day, this is about silencing people. And it's not just about silencing Kanye West. That's not what this is about. That's what they want you to think this is about. This isn't merely about silencing people who are hateful or bigoted. That's what the New York Times wants you to think that this is about. This is about silencing anyone and everyone with whom the left disagrees with. The reason why the New York Times is doing this is they are scared. They are terrified. They're terrified of people calling them out on their left-wing bias. And they used to have protection the same way CNN and MSNBC and the Biden administration and the Democrat Party had. They had control over the public town square that unfortunately is now Twitter. They had a ton of control. They were able to silence people. They were able to just call something misinformation when it wasn't. They just disagreed with it. And they were able to pull content down. And that makes it easier for their side to start to win arguments and change the culture. And now that it's not there, what are they trying to do? They're trying to just destroy the actual platform and the person behind it. If Elon Musk took the position that we needed to have more restrictions on speech, they would be celebrating it. Because it would mean less conservative thought. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Amazon, as we've been reporting, is letting a whole bunch of people go, a whole lot of workers go. And these are not just your typical workers. These aren't, you know, seasonal warehouse workers. These are folks who make a lot of money. And on top of letting all those people go, up to 10,000, workers aren't returning to the office. Now, in part, it's because it's cheaper for Amazon to keep these people at home because of the payroll tax in Seattle. On top of that, we know that Facebook let some people go. Twitter has let people go. And it's impacting Seattle. And as we've been talking about, this isn't just about those individual companies suffering and maybe the economic implications for other industries. Really, this is about all the folks who depend on Amazon workers going into the office, collecting a paycheck, whatever it is. Pandora Fitness is closing down. Now, they're not far from the Amazon headquarters, about two and a half blocks. And at one point, it was a really popular gym. Really popular. Especially popular for the folks who worked at Amazon and Facebook.
Maybe 80% of our clientele are either in this building or they're Amazon across the street or they're at Microsoft.
That's David Israel, the owner, talking with King 5. When you've got a lot of people who are clients who happen to work for Amazon, who maybe either aren't showing up to the office anymore or have lost their jobs, guess what? Your business is going to suffer. And that's exactly what happened to Pandora. Business was down 65% as of today. 65%. And they've been struggling. They collected money from the PPP, got something like $250,000 in loans, doing their best to just stay afloat during a pandemic when, hey, remember, we had remarkably silly and unscientific COVID rules. We were the first to shut down and we were nearly the last to reopen. And people like David Israel struggled. And now, as he tells King 5, he just can't do it anymore. He's got to close down.
We've probably had, maybe 8 to 10% who have come in who have said, hey, just in the last like 4 weeks, I actually lost my job. Even if you've lost your job, we'll continue to have you work out, even if you're not paying any.
Yeah, that doesn't work so well. So now he's closing this business. And again, it's not just because of Amazon. It's not just because of Facebook or Meta. What also is happening in the downtown Seattle area? Any guesses?
Say
remote working.
Oh, it's remote working.
Lots of people are working remotely. That was a good guess. Right on the money. And what happens when those folks are working from home instead of in their offices in downtown Seattle? Well, guess what they're not doing? They're not visiting the nearby businesses. This is a conversation that is not being discussed. Very few people are focusing on this. And by the way, this is not just a Seattle issue. You've got lots of businesses out there that are built upon the morning rush of workers who are going into the office. They're stopping by for a muffin and a coffee. You have businesses that have people from nearby offices, whether it's Amazon or Nordstrom, showing up for lunch, showing up for a quick workout, showing up for a facial, get their nails done, going for a business lunch, whatever it is. They're not doing that anymore. And that means you are causing so much pain for these businesses. And the ones that don't somehow evolve, however that might be, and I don't know how that will be for each business, but if they don't evolve, they're going to go out of business. And when you are providing in-person workouts, there's only so much you can do. And they've gotten to the point where they just can't hold on anymore. And by the way, kudos to Hudson Pacific. Is it the landlord? He said, our landlord, Hudson Pacific, was just very, very supportive, but these buildings are all empty because everybody wants to work from home. He has shrinking class sizes that used to be full. He used to have a lot of people going to the gym before and after work. They're just not there anymore. So at what point do we have a bigger conversation about the whole remote workforce thing? Because you've got so many different stories about the economy that are sort of just hitting up against each other and causing significant issues. You've got the tech sector as a whole, which is struggling. Edward Lawrence is the White House correspondent for Fox Business. He's going to be on the show in the 5 o'clock hour to take a deeper dive into this particular issue. It has a lot to do with advertising. He'll explain it. But it's not just this issue of just the general slowdown of certain sectors of the economy. It's the remote workforce, and no one wants to talk about it. And how many more jobs that are being created and being advertised are now specifically citing the fact that you can work from home? Is that the new direction that we're going in? And that's a direction that is being fueled by people who just now suddenly refuse to want to go back into the office. So it's the actual people, you, taxpayers, who are inadvertently, I don't think you're doing this intentionally, but you're inadvertently hurting these other businesses. And no one talks about it. But we did have a jobs report today. Thought we would dive a little bit into it. 263 new jobs. This was well past what was being predicted. Yay! Less time they have to spend with their parents. 263,000 new jobs. President Biden said that his economic plan is working.
It means our plan to build the economy from the bottom up and the middle out. You're tired of hearing me say that, but it's working. And the wealthy are still doing very well while the middle class and the poor are having a shot.
I mean, they are having a shot. There are more jobs, and that's good news. There's no doubt. But it's also kind of mixed messages. Because you have a relatively strong economy if you're judging it by the job creation, right? But when you've got inflation that's out of control, the only way that you're bringing down inflation is actually if the economy isn't as strong, if the job market isn't as strong. And there's some mixed messages happening, economic mixed messages. Because while it's certainly good news that you've got 263,000 new jobs, bad news is the participation rate, the labor participation rate, is at 62.1%. That's down from 62.2% last month. That's not good. That's not good. That means the labor market is shrinking. It's continuously shrinking. That's why the unemployment rate has stayed exactly the same year over year. It's not. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know. Slackers, start looking. Get a job. It's not my fault. November saw 186,000 fewer people in the labor force. That's a lot. And what this accounts to is about 40% of the people who are unemployed not looking. Now, some of them are not looking because they have retired. Some of them are choosing not to look because they've been getting a whole bunch of money from the government. Some of them are not looking for a variety of reasons. But when that number basically doesn't change, the economy isn't as strong as Joe Biden will have you believe. That's the truth. It's not nearly as strong as he wants you to believe. And that's why Rick Santelli over at CNBC, He was sounding the alarms today.
The labor force participation rate moving in the wrong direction. This is not good. 62.1. That equals the low mark, which was in July, also at 62.1 on a recent basis. If you go back into last year, we had 61.6, 61.4 actually in January of 2020. So when you look at it in the context of 2022, it's a big disappointment.
It's a huge disappointment. Now, maybe you can write it off. Maybe you can say we're going into the holiday season and maybe people want to start fresh in the new year. My New Year's resolution is to get a job. And it's kind of struggling. Maybe they find it pretty difficult to enjoy the holiday season with their family. And they're not totally in a rush because of their financial situation. Maybe isn't all that bad because of all the money that they got from the federal government, which I'm told by Janet Yellen definitely 100% had nothing to do with our rising inflation rate. And maybe they'll go ahead and start to look in the new year. But if you talk to Peter Schiff, who's a financial analyst, he was on Fox News, he said actually next year things might get worse.
It's not like the 2008 recession or financial crisis. It's actually going to be much worse than that. This is just the beginning. I think we've been in a stealth recession all year, but I think the recession is going to get much worse in 2023. But what's also going to get a lot worse is inflation, because one thing that's kept the lid on consumer prices in 2022 has been the strength of the dollar. But I think the dollar has lost that strength. It had the worst month in 12 years in November. It's off to a horrible start in December. I think we're going to have a currency crisis in 2023, and that's going to fuel the inflation fire just as the unemployment rate is really spiking and this recession is kicking into a higher gear.
That sound promising? Doesn't. Sounds kind of bad. Seems like things are not going to go the way that folks had hoped. And that's sad on a whole number of levels. Should we celebrate the fact that we got some new jobs? Yes, 100%. Should we pretend that the labor participation rate isn't where it is? No. And you'll get a lot of that pretending. Tune into CNN. Well, you don't hate yourself that much, but trust me, if you tuned into CNN, you would get a whole lot of celebrating while completely ignoring some really considerable data points. And another one that they'll say 5.1% increase in wages year over year. It's awesome, right? It's good. 5.1% increase in wages. Yeah, that's good. The other data point is 7.3% inflation, which means your wages aren't even matching the inflation rate. So it would be the equivalent of actually losing some money when you think about it. It's not good. Excuse me, 7.7% inflation. Just so happened to flash on the TV right when I said it. So thank you, Fox News. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. It would be wise of me to actually log in. Elon Musk has indicated not long ago via tweet that he'll be releasing, quote, what really happened with the Hunter Biden story suppression by Twitter. It's going to be published at 5 o'clock Eastern. That was 2 o'clock. So he's a little bit late. But apparently he says we're double-checking some facts, so we'll probably start live tweeting in about 40 minutes. He said that an hour ago. So we're waiting for some fun stuff. We'll be reading you the live tweets when they occur. It's the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. I've been hitting refresh on Elon Musk's Twitter feed, but have yet to see an update. Except, oh, he just said, here we go. Literally just said, here we go. Except we're not getting much yet. So
he just said, here we go. There wasn't like
no, he's got it.
Can you open the attachment?
It says there's a virus if I open it.
Is it worth it?
Well, now I'm getting pop-ups of pornography. No, he just retweeted someone, Matt Taibbi, who is an analyst and an author, and he's writing a thread in real time about the Twitter files and says, what you're about to read is the first installment in a series based upon thousands of internal documents obtained by sources at Twitter. The Twitter Files tells an incredible story from inside one of the world's largest and most influential social media platforms. It's a Frankenstein tale of human-built mechanism grown out of the control of its designer. He goes on to say Twitter in its conception was a brilliant tool for enabling instant mass communication, making a true real-time global conversation possible for the first time. Blah, 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 blah. Slowly over time, Twitter staff and executives began to find more and more uses for these tools. Outsiders began petitioning the company to manipulate speech as well. First a little, then more often, then constantly. And that's where it left off. That's a good teaser, right? That's a good teaser.
I'd say
now,
so.
Now you're all like, you just set it up. What's the answer? How are they doing it? So once we get some more answers as to what exactly all of this is, we'll find out. But the funny thing is some folks are responding like, this is all, you've given it to some author to then suss through and tell us what he thinks is in it. You're not just going to release all of the documents. Which is what I kind of got the right when you say I'm going to release the Twitter files, you get the impression you're going to literally release files.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption, right?
Or like a screenshot of said file, like something more than just some random guy that most people haven't even heard of. So my friend Ryan Saavedra from the Daily Wire said, "Is this a joke?" So we'll stay tuned to see what comes of it. There is a game that I like to play. It's one of my favorite games in the history of the political world. And every single time I get an opportunity to play said game, it puts a smile on my face.
What the heck did Joe Biden say?
It's a part of the week where we try to decipher what exactly Joe Biden actually said when speaking in front of a microphone or when just speaking in a general direction of what he thinks are people but oftentimes are just pigeons. In this case, it happened today during his press conference where he was talking about the economy and the jobs report. And he was asked as to whether or not he was going to visit Raphael Warnock in Georgia to help with his campaign. I honestly can tell you I don't know what he was saying.
Are you going to Georgia to help Senator Warnock?
I'm going to Georgia today to help Senator Warren. Not to Georgia. I'm going to help Senator Warnock today. I'm doing a major fundraiser up in Boston.
Thanks,
today for the... our next and continued Senate candidate, Senator.
Is he helping Warren or Warnock? Where is he going? Is he going to Georgia or is he going to Philadelphia or Massachusetts? Excuse me. Where is he going?
Yeah.
They're both current and would be continued. So when you say and continued Senator, that would imply you're talking about Warnock because Elizabeth Warren is not in an election right now. Warnock is. But then when you say Warren and Boston, which is where she's from Massachusetts, that's the state she represents. Am I, okay, hold on. We got to figure this out. Let's listen again.
You're going to Georgia to help Senator Warnock.
I'm going to Georgia today to help Senator Warren.
I'm going to Georgia today to help Senator Warren.
Not to Georgia.
Not to Georgia.
And help Senator Warnock and I'm doing a major fundraiser up in Boston.
I bet another major fundraiser in Boston. He just said a lot of words.
Thanks.
Today for our next and continued Senator.
He's going to. I've figured out he's going to a fundraiser to support either Warnock or Warren. Is it possible that he's going to do both? Is this a fundraiser in Boston to raise money for Warnock in Georgia? Is that possible?
There's a lot of things on the table when you lay it out like
I
that.
I honestly didn't like, and then at some point, Boston fundraiser.
You want me to put it into Otter?
I don't think it will. Our transcription service will not be able to figure this one out. This is just really hard to understand.
Senator Warnock.
I'm going to Georgia today to help Senator Warren. Not to Georgia. I'm going to help Senator Warren today. I'm doing a major fundraiser.
What is he saying? What is he saying there? It's just words that are just a slur.
I'm going to help Senator Warren today. I'm doing a major fundraiser in Boston today.
What is he saying? What did he just say there? Can we Google where he went? We have to know that he's going somewhere. 1-800-465-8770 if you can figure out what he just said. The person who gives me the perfect transcription of what he just said and an explanation will win not even a memory from me of you entering the contest and winning, because it's not actually a contest. But in the moment, I will be able to read your text and give you kudos. 1-800-465-8770. If you can tell me what in the world he says here.
You're going to Georgia to help Senator Warnock.
I'm going to Georgia today to help Senator Warren. Not to Georgia. I'm going to help Senator Warren today. I'm doing a major fundraiser up in Boston today for our next continued Senator candidate. Senator.
So the AP is reporting that he's going to Boston, but he is helping raise funds for
I was
Warnock.
Right. I got it then.
But it was even the AP headline said, "What to boost Georgia's Warnock, Biden goes to ... Massachusetts." So even the AP's making fun of him.
I mean, it is funny. But I guess I got it right. That takes skill. That's not something.
I guess.
No. That's not something you're born with. This is something you work really, really hard at to perfect. You perfect it. You put hours of manpower into it, mind power into it. You go over, I've seen so much tape, it could make you sick. In fact, I puked the other day because I was watching so much of it.
I could smell it.
It was really bad. Okay, I didn't brush my teeth one time. Big deal. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into an issue we've been sounding an alarm on for a very long time. Finally, some other media outlets are catching on. We'll get into it when we return.